I am Plant on the Line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. David Wilson joins me again. The acclaimed artist has a new exhibition at Vancouver's Komodo Gallery that's just open and will be on until the 8th of October. Absence features new works that evoke the angst of our times, a search for meaning, introspection, and the realization that the comfort and protection of those he loves is limited. I'll get David to tell us more about what absence means, what these works represent in the life of the artist, and we'll continue the conversation we started a year or so ago about what this city, Vancouver, his home for nearly 25 years, represents in his work, and just how he's evolved as an artist in this town. David Wilson studied at Emily Carr Institute of Art and Design. He considers himself a self-taught painter. His website is at davidwilson.ca, and the Komodo Gallery's site is at komodogallery.com. The Saturday, the 17th of September, David will be giving an artist talk at 1 p.m. The Komodo Gallery is located at 1525 West 6th Avenue in Vancouver. Please welcome back to the Plant on the Line program in person today, David Wilson. Mr. Wilson, good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for coming in to do this. It's a pleasure to meet you.
You as well.
All these years. You know, I tried to describe in the introduction what this exhibition is, but since you're its artist, why not tell us about what you were thinking about when you put together an exhibition like Absence?
Okay, sure. Well, when I started working on this exhibition back in about a year ago, I started to think about what I might want to do, and for this exhibition, it was, you know, just inserting a little bit more of my own thought process into the work, stepping away from the more literal aspects of painting, which I have been working with for the last 20 years or so, and just a bit more abstract is, you know, that's an easier way to describe it, but just more gestural, more visceral. So that was the sort of main parameter I was working with. And so this exhibition, I created a number of studies, and they're like practice runs for large pieces, and finished up the exhibition, or preparation of the exhibition, with these maybe 10 or so large pieces. And you know, there's an exploration of basically where I live in the city.
Yeah, and the gallery director, from what I've read, said that your work, not that it's being more abstract, but the pieces in this exhibit are a little more abstract than whatever you've exhibited previously. Is that about right?
Yeah, it's a stepping away from what I was traditionally doing. It's just much more emotive, and there's less control over the paint, through brushes. It's more drippy, more wet, more use of color that you wouldn't traditionally see in my works.
Does that represent, however, one's feeling at the time, say?
I think so. Yeah, and, I think I had some health issues prior to this past year and a half or so, that I've been able to correct, and I feel good. I have good energy, and I think that the energy is translated into the paintings. They're much more visceral in their looking at them and in the way they were painted.
A theme through most of these pieces, I guess, and throughout your work over the last number of years that I've become familiar with it, is introspection. Thinking about yourself, your city, the wider world. I guess you have to be at a certain age to become introspective, don't you? I mean, you're not at the beginning of your career thinking of
That's
the
true.
Past, right? I suppose.
Yeah, I know. I think you need a little bit of life experience.
Yeah.
I like to think I'm not a slow learner, but I take my time to move from one stage to another, and that's the operative word, time.
Yeah, and that's all we have, and we have to use it as best we can.
Indeed.
And the other thing about your work, and I told you this a year or so ago, was how you've chronicled this city, and through your work. I mean, even in the abstract. I talked to you about this piece. I keep thinking about this every time I think about your work. I was in a it was a bakery on Beach Avenue, and they had one of your paintings on the wall, and there was this, I think it was of Granville Street.
Okay.
or one of the major streets in the city, and I noticed that you'd put either the direction of the traffic or the people walking in a direction that they wouldn't normally walk.
Right.
And it got me thinking, and as I said, I've been thinking about it years and years later. Even though it's not, say, a photograph, it's still how you look at the city and how a lot of people look at the city, regardless of whether it's factual or not.
Yeah, I think it's a shared or common experience that we have, you know, just being in the city, you know, especially Vancouver with the rain. I was FaceTiming with a dealer I work with in Newfoundland just this morning, and he's talking about my work, and he's commenting on the fact that I use umbrellas here a lot, and you know, he's saying that, you know, Newfoundland, they don't use umbrellas because, he says, they refer to them as kites because they have so much wind, and
yeah.
I wasn't aware of that, but he's kind of chuckling how they, you know, they just put on a hat and a coat and that's it. But here in Vancouver, it's not nearly as horizontal, and you know, we have vertical weather.
Yeah, and it doesn't get windy very much when it rains. I mean, it gets windy a few times a year,
but
it doesn't rain when it's windy. We don't get the sort of weather that they do. But the umbrella, that's very much a theme in this in this group of work that you're exhibiting at Komodo Gallery. It got me thinking about the umbrella and our attachments to them. One year I decided to, because, you know, everybody has an umbrella that folds inside out, and then you got to throw it out because you can't use it anymore.
Exactly.
And or you lose it, you leave it on a bus or a coffee shop or something like that, and you got to get a new one. So I decided one year to go to one of those, it's not a fancy umbrella shop, but it's, you know, it's an umbrella shop where you're probably spending a lot more for an umbrella than you should.
Yeah.
But I was thinking, you know, because we use it so often, we should put out the investment because, you know, we'll be using it even in the summer, as we have this summer, right? So it got me thinking about just how much a part of the umbrella is. I mean, do you have a certain attachment to a physical umbrella that it sort of manifested itself so many times in this exhibit?
Well, I was really drawn to the metaphor of the umbrella as opposed to a personal umbrella.
Yeah.
But it's, you know, it's, as I, you know, I spoke a minute ago about just having health issues. My wife and daughter both have ongoing health issues, and you know, they're manageable. But it's, you know, it's that they're chronic health issues, and you know, I as a father, husband, have to look after them. And there's times where, you know, because it's health, you know, it's chronic health, I'm not qualified to do much about it. So there's this sort of sense of helplessness that I experience at times, and you know, doing my best as a, you know, within my role to provide and protect and such. You know, sometimes it's just not enough. You know, life has its own way of interfering with your plans and expectations. And I like the umbrella because you can protect yourself from the rain a little bit, mostly.
Mostly,
but you will still get wet.
Yeah. And it'll fly away if you're not careful.
Exactly.
It'll get stolen.
That's right.
I mean these things, we see it so often, but I mean, it becomes so much a part of our lives, you know. And I don't think until I invested what I did in a specific umbrella did I realize that. And then subsequent to that, a month later, I lost it.
Hmm.
And so, I mean, I can't tell you just how upset I was. Not angry or whatever, but I mean, it's just how it screwed up my day almost in some instances, because I'm looking for that umbrella and then I realize, oh yeah, I left it at L'Abattoir and someone swiped it.
Oh, it's even worse, right?
Yeah,
someone took it from you.
Yeah. The realizing your place in the world and realizing your place in the family unit, in the city, in the wider world, and realizing how powerless one is at times.
Yeah.
Again, like introspection, does that come with a lot of years behind you and coming at a certain age, say?
Sure, yeah. My wife and I often talk about, the years before our daughter was born. You know, we were in our 20s, and life was pretty easy and pretty good. Like, you didn't have those health concerns. You didn't think about you know, some of the things that we think about now, and you know, they wouldn't, certainly didn't have children, and I think that just comes with time, with life experience. Those questions that you have now are you know, forefront of my mind often, especially when I'm painting. It's not something that is. Sometimes it's conscious, sometimes mm-hmm. it's just like, you know, that's just life. Life interferes with what you're doing, or impacts what you're doing, not interferes, impacts what you're doing.
And it you realize just how quickly time goes after a while, don't you?
Yeah, it goes by much too quickly. It just seems to race by now.
Yeah, especially, when you're in high school, say, and you think you have all these years ahead of you. And then it goes by in a flash, and then, you know, you forget half of what happened to you.
I think so.
When you look at your work, previous pieces, say, even the ones in absence, mm-hmm. Do you remember, say, what you were feeling that day or in that period of time that it took you to complete a piece?
Not so much specifics, but there's certain
like moods, perhaps.
Yeah, I think that's better. Yeah, it's a better memory to rely upon. I think memory's tricky anyway. But I think that's reflected in the work itself. Certain paintings I wouldn't want to create when I'm in a bad mood, or, mm-hmm. or vice versa. You know, when I'm feeling really happy. I think mood really affects the work.
What about the course of your day? And the discipline that one needs to be an artist. I mean, there are times where you do have to finish something,
sure.
A commission or an exhibit like this, or pieces for an exhibit like this. How do you deal with the day-to-day stuff that might be around you that might, say, affect one's mood, but you have work that you need to do?
Yeah, well, there's always things that will impact mm-hmm. your ability to work as an artist. I'm fortunate that I'm able to do this full time. A lot of artists have to support what they do with part time jobs, so I've eliminated that aspect of it. So I'm able to focus on it, you know, all day if I want to, mm-hmm. which I often do.
But do you have a schedule, say, or how does
It's kind of a loose schedule. I used to be a morning person. My best work used to be produced in the morning. Now it seems like it's shifting to the afternoon and sometimes into the evening. So it's, every day is different. You know, I'll just get up in the morning and I'll read the newspapers and go online and see what's happening around in the world and locally. And then I'll just have a conversation with my wife about what the plans are for the day, and then I get to work. And sometimes it's painting, sometimes it's going out sourcing photographs, sometimes it's working on my computer with just various things you have to do, maintenance and such. So every day is different, but the creative process itself is pretty straightforward, from taking the photograph, manipulating the photo, and sketching it out, painting it.
What do you say to people who think of a life in the arts? I mean, it can be a tough slog.
Mm-hmm.
But in terms of the discipline that one needs, because, we think of art as maybe perhaps easy. I mean, if one has, say, talent,
sure.
it may look easy for some people,
yeah.
Not as say rigid, perhaps, as in terms of your time, as say working 9 to 5 at a certain job. But there is a certain element of discipline that's needed to do what you do.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. And so how do you explain that to people in terms of what they need to do if they want to be someone like you?
Well, I think there's that, Malcolm Gladwell, that 10,000 hours.
Certain amount of hours.
Think that's accurate. I think you really have to put your time in. I just read a fantastic book by an artist named Grayson Perry. He's an artist from the UK. And he was talking about how a lot of people want to be artists. And he says the best artists he knows are those that want to create. And the life of an artist is what follows, and I thought it really resonated with me, because I think of myself as an artist sometimes, but I really just all I want to do is paint.
Mm-hmm.
I can't see myself doing anything else. So I think just putting that time in, irrespective of what's going to happen, that's what put me in a position where I'm able to actually do this full time. Just putting your hours in, you have to put the hours in.
And then the other element of your work that fascinates me, because I'm not as adventurous even, is the element of risk. Is there a lot of that in your work? I mean, I'm just assuming now that there is.
Yeah, well, I think for this exhibition in particular there was, because I was stepping away largely from what I was doing in the past. There are some elements of it there, but I think it's still recognizable as my work, but it's vastly different than what you would have seen last year. And so, you know, this is how I make my living. I fill up a gallery full of paintings that people haven't seen before, and hopefully they'll like them enough to buy them. If they don't, then I'm not sure what I'll do, but it's a big question mark. So there's a bit of a risk there for sure.
Yeah, and when you set out to do a piece, you're starting a painting.
Yeah.
Do you know what it looks like as you're starting it, or does that evolve for however long it takes to finish it?
Yeah, sometimes I know exactly what it's going to look like before I paint it. Sometimes I have an idea. The ones that I have an idea, they're the hardest ones to do because I'm not really sure how I'm going to get there. But they generally end up as I expect them to, but not always.
Yeah, and the line in your bio that I was mentioning to you before we started was that even though you had gone to a school to study, you still today regard yourself as a self-taught painter, and I guess that goes into the what we just talked a few minutes ago about, is the idea that you do have to invest the time to get to where you are.
Sure. I mean, I think that I think that any artist is really a self-taught painter. I think that you you can go to school and spend 4, 5, 6, 7 years studying with other artists, teachers, but eventually you have to create your own voice. And I just skipped that one step of going to school. I'd studied through various other means, but I didn't study under any particular school of training.
Yeah.
It was mostly just self-taught. It's those hours of development that really get you where you need to go, I think, mostly.
And the medium in which you work? The kind of paint, say?
Yes.
How do you get to that? I mean, is that a lot of experimenting beforehand?
Yeah. When I first started painting, I think I was painting with watercolors. And that's a very, at that time, it was a very rigid medium to work with. And then I started working with acrylic paints years ago. I can't remember. Too long.
Yeah.
But the medium is something that it's somewhat limited in oil paint. You can do so much more with oils. There's acrylic paints. There are more restrictions just because of the way that the paint dries and how it lies on the canvas and that sort of thing. But I've been able over the last few years to just sort of push my acrylic painting skills beyond where they were and make the medium do what I wanted to do rather than work within the restrictions of it. And I'm pretty happy with where it's going now.
Yeah. And the space in which you work, that's near home, right?
It is, yeah.
Yeah. And is that important because some people have to go somewhere else to be a photographer, to paint even, to sketch. I mean, people travel to wherever they want to go to sketch, but for you, working close to home like that, is that something that you found helpful?
Yeah, well, just working within family life. I can work within the family, and still have easy access to my studio. I can just step outside, and it's in the garage, and I can just step outside, any time of day or night, and work for a while, and then join back into what's going on in the house, or when people are sleeping, I can be out there working. It's the immediacy of it is fantastic.
This is why I like doing the show, is because I get to talk to people that do things that I wouldn't otherwise do, as I was telling you before we started. And I mean, I can't draw for the life of me.
Yeah.
And so to talk to someone who can, who is artistic, is fascinating because, I mean, it's something that one greatly admires. So a lot of these stereotypes that we have about artists, I mean, you'll help me shatter some of them or confirm some of them. How often does it happen where you'll get the light bulb go over your head on and then you have to rush to where you're working because something of inspiration has struck?
Yeah, I think it's more like a dimmer switch. You know, it just sort of comes on slowly. I think sometimes it's a process. I think that's really what it took me a long time to learn. You know, being self-taught and not having been in a school situation, is that process is really important. And developing a methodology from, you know, you can start off with an idea, you know, can be brilliant, but you have to be able to take that idea and create something wonderful. But there's that big gap between, you know, the idea and the completion of it. And so that's your process, and trying to develop a process that is consistent from painting to painting to painting. That's the trick. And so I think I always refer to these to, you know, the time you put into it. But I think that's the gradual turning on of the light.
Yeah.
So sometimes I get a good idea.
Yeah.
But most of the time it's just slow development.
Like, I'll come up with a certain question. I'll think of asking someone, and I'll forget
right.
to write it down. I mean, does that happen to an artist?
Sure. Yeah, yeah, all the time. Yeah, all
these I feel great. Much better now.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. No, it happens a lot. You know, it's like, you know, I think of all these great things I want to do just before I fall asleep, and then I fall asleep, and what was that? Right.
Yeah. There's one painting. I don't know if it was in last year's exhibition, or this year's. It was inspired by something you'd seen on Instagram, a photograph of downtown Vancouver from above.
Yes.
And I've seen both the Instagram photo, and I've seen your piece.
Yeah.
I haven't looked at it closely enough to see if there are any differences in terms of what they are, but it evokes how a lot of people think about Vancouver. Even, I mean, you and I don't live downtown, but I mean, when we think of Vancouver, if we have to describe Vancouver, I mean,
sure.
That sort of city center, that core, is what people will think about this city, won't they?
I think so. I think that downtown area is like an icon of
the landmark,
Vancouver,
yeah.
For sure. You know, that's what you identify as Vancouver.
And I mean, that piece in of itself, I mean, as the city changes. That's a record of what the city looked like at that time, isn't it?
I think so. Yeah, I think a lot of the work I've done over the years is definitely a record of it. You know, I can go back and look at them and see. Oh, yeah, that location has changed dramatically.
Yeah. So do you when you're out to chronicle a cityscape, say, do you think about what you're feeling? Or what you want to say about where we're headed? Because, I mean, as we all know, we're all talking about how the city's changing.
Yeah.
And not necessarily for the good sometimes. Do you use your art to say something about where we're headed?
I don't know if I do that consciously, but I'm pretty sure that, you know, just by virtue of living in Vancouver, you know, that comes into the conversation of what I'm doing. And when I go looking for material to work with, I'm not looking for anything in specific. It's more about being in the right place at the right time and capturing something with my camera, going back to my studio and working on my computer with it to edit and develop the photograph and from which I'll use as a reference. And then I'll start thinking more about what it is I've captured. I rely on intuition quite a bit. So I think that... you know, these elements of who we are, who I am, living in the city, are introduced at that point. Not so much when I'm out there taking the photographs, but more on developing that, you know, working within that process.
A lot of us think of Vancouver when we do, or when it's described to us by outsiders. I mean, that blue, that, you know, the Douglas Copeland City of Glass blue that
sure.
seems, I mean, there's at least two or three Vancouver books on the shelf here that have that, and that means Vancouver.
Yeah.
But some of the colors that you use in your pieces, especially the ones, you know, where there are umbrellas or it's night or, you know, it's wet and it's raining and it's cold. When I see those, I mean, that's how Vancouver feels to me.
Sure.
I mean, it's not whatever Douglas Copeland wants to describe Vancouver as.
Yeah, I think different colors evoke different emotions, and I like to use a variety of colors just because of the symbolism that they represent, and just because it's, you know, I'm able to articulate something about what I'm feeling or saying at the time, and color is a really wonderful medium in which to do that.
So what's it like then to when people come up to you, as I have just now, and told you how your work makes them feel?
I think it's fantastic. I love that when people feel something looking at a painting. I think that art, you know, whether it's mine or anybody else's, you know, it's fantastic if it can create an emotion and a response within the viewer. I think that's, to me, that feels like I've been successful with that painting.
And does the emotions, because you had an opening recently for Absence, and I guess you're milling about, and you can talk to people who are looking in, and I'm sure they tell you what they think of a piece, eh?
Yeah, I think, for the most part, they do.
They might not say what they think of it, but they will probably, a discussion ensues because of whatever is on the wall between you and them.
Exactly, yeah. I had an email from a client that purchased a piece. I don't know her, but she purchased one of the paintings at the show. And she articulated to me how the painting had, she had responded to it in this way that was very similar to what I was thinking, the process, how we talked about going back to understanding, thinking about what you're painting at the time. She was understanding the process and the things I was trying to communicate within that painting without me actually having to be there and talk to her about it. And she has gone through her own life situation, and it was quite interesting to have that sort of email discussion with her. It happens.
Yeah, and so, I don't know how much that influences whatever work you'll do next, but, I mean, do you get some creative inspiration from discussions like that?
Yeah, well, I think continent, subconsciously, I want a response from people. I want people to be able to resonate with the work to a certain extent, and if I feel like I'm doing something right, then it sort of pushes me in the direction I'm pursuing. I mean, I don't necessarily adapt the work to people's emotions and such, but it confirms that I'm on the right path.
You're not going to paint with an eye for what sells?
Well, I have to paint something that sells because that's how I make my living, but...
You're not going to be beholden to it, I guess.
No.
Right? Yeah, or
no.
Choked off creatively because you got to make a quota, say.
Yeah, well, I have to make a living. I have to pay my bills. I'm like everybody else, unfortunately, when it comes to looking after those things. But I certainly won't be adjusting my work to fit within a certain criteria that I know will sell. That's not really what interests me, but... I have to incorporate elements of sales.
Yeah, and so in your work, I see you, having gotten to know you in the last year or so since we first chatted. I see the city, and I see whatever you're feeling about the city, about the wider world, your life, and the other word that comes up is resilient. About everything. I mean, you and Vancouver. We can trash Vancouver all we like, and I mean, some of it deserves trashing. It's bloody expensive to live here.
Yeah.
But through it all, we're going to make it, won't we? You'll make it.
Well, yeah. I mean, we don't have any choice. You know, it's like I often hear people talking about individuals being heroes for just surviving and. You know, I just think that it's, what choice do we have? You just have to push through, and I definitely think Vancouver's going to be fine. I'm not too worried about Vancouver.
We were talking as we start, because we live in the same neighborhood.
Yes.
Just how it's changed a great deal, and some of it for the better. I mean, yeah. Great restaurants now in this part
That's
of the
right.
city, right?
Exactly.
I mean, we've got friends who find out that I live here and you know, mention all the places that they've been to, and it's, you know.
It's kind of nice.
It's different than what it was, say, 5 years ago even.
Yeah.
Another stereotype that people have about artists is that they suffer for their art. I mean, is that something that I mean, you talked about some challenges that you've had in recent years. We talked last year about loss in your family life.
Sure.
Is there a connection, do you think, in terms of that which one suffers through and the art that they produce?
Well, I think the suffering, whether it's myself or anybody else, I think that it, you know, how you manage it is what makes you who you are. And I think it can make my, it has made my work better. I don't think it's something that is entirely necessary, but I think it can, you know, you can draw something good from it. I think suffering's overrated, but it's certainly a, yeah, you can use it for good.
Yeah, and I guess, just as you get the benefit of whatever good happens in your life, you have to take something from whatever bad happens to your life, otherwise it's not life, you know?
Yeah, and, you know, I hate that expression, whatever doesn't kill you makes you stronger.
Yeah.
Because that's, you know, it's just like it's so trite.
Yeah.
But there is, you know, there is an element of truth to that. You know, if you, you know, the hard things that come along, if you let them wipe you out, then sure, it's going to destroy you. But I choose not to.
And there is solace in art with whatever is happening in one's life, whatever's happening in the world around us. You find that you can find comfort in what you do as an artist?
Absolutely. You know, it's an escape for me when I'm painting. You know, it's a place I can go and try to forget about, you know, some of the things that are going on. Art is something that, you know, I chose to do years ago. And I'm, you know, being a creative individual now, it's incredibly gratifying. I can't imagine doing anything else. I'm kind of useless now.
As a kid, I mean, is this what you wanted to do? I mean, were you good at, say, like, as a child, did you doodle a lot, and did you think that, hey, I like this, or someone tell you you're pretty good at it?
Yeah, well, I used to draw these cartoons of my family.
Yeah.
And, you know, just all these uncomplimentary cartoons of my brothers and my mom and dad, and I always looked good, but they always looked terrible, so... I did that as a kid, and when I got into high school, I had this really fabulous art teacher, and he instilled in me this sort of interest and desire to become a painter. And just from that point on, I just decided that that's what I have to do. I wasn't sure how to do it.
Mm-hmm.
I chose not to go to art school because I wasn't much of a student. I didn't really enjoy education, but it's a bit of a slog, but. I mean, like I said, I'm kind of useless now. I don't know what else I would do. There's not much else I'm qualified for.
But it remains fun. I mean, even though it is the job. I mean,
It's, you know, I'm so grateful for the fact that I can do something that I enjoy every day. I don't have to, you know, I do what I want to, as opposed to what someone else is asking me to do or paying me to do. It's I'll do commissions once in a while, and they're fabulous. They work within the parameters of my skill set and. My comfort zone, and I'm pretty happy. I can't imagine otherwise.
This is not the last of silly questions I'll ask, but it got me thinking the other day. I mean, say you're at home,
mm-hmm.
and a wall needs painting, or you know, the shed outside needs painting. I mean,
yeah.
Do you do that work as well?
Oh, of course, yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, and. How do you approach that? I mean, do you approach that like you would your work, say?
No, I don't really like doing those sorts of things.
So nobody likes doing chores,
I guess,
try
and
right?
get them out of the way as quick as possible. But
yeah.
I'm not a handyman, that's for sure. We get people in to look after, you know, the plumbing and carpentry and that sort of thing. But, I like to get outside, and I like cutting the grass and, you know, looking after the garden and that sort of thing, for sure.
But say inside your house, when you had to move into it, or however right. long ago you did you do the painting in the house?
Yeah, we do that sometimes.
Yeah.
It's a different experience. You know, it's a chore.
Yeah. I don't know why I'm just thinking of that, you know, because I've always wondered that. I mean, do barbers cut their own hair? Do you know what I mean? It's one of those things that I've always...
Well, I think that, you know, there's times I think, oh, I'd really like to do a special treatment on a particular wall.
But yeah.
I just never do.
Yeah, it's home, and exactly. it's not work, I guess. You know,
and
what
all,
I mean?
All the carpenters that have these massive projects that are unfinished in their own homes, right? And they just never get around to it because they're always busy doing work for someone else's someone else's project. And when they come home, they don't want to work anymore.
I knew someone who cleaned houses. And what really surprised me when I went to visit was how unkempt their place was. You know? I couldn't reconcile that.
Yeah, I can understand that, though. Like, if you clean houses all day, do you want to clean your own? Probably not.
You were in the news recently about some thefts that occurred.
Yeah, it was unfortunate.
Yeah. Does that? It's any sort of robbery, any sort of theft. I mean, it's an assault on one's person, one's property. But as an artist and losing what you lost, is that a lot more visceral, say, than your TV stolen or something like that?
Yeah, because they took they took three paintings, two or three paintings, which was, oddly enough, I'm okay with that because I can paint again. But they took, what I really struggled with was when they took my paints and my brushes, because that's how I create my work, and they took a lot. So yeah, it was tough. You know, you can replace the television. They took some other things, like hockey gear and that kind of thing, but it was the paint and the brushes that really hurt. And the other thing too, I thought about that afterwards, after the fact, was thieves only take things that they can unload and sell. So there's some artists out there that are buying stolen, what's obviously stolen, brushes and paint. Well, that was kind of a drag too.
Yeah. I remember reading about you and seeing you on television.
Yeah.
And I felt, I mean, I feel bad for anybody, but I mean, I thought about when you were talking about the work and how you work. I mean, it's something that I guess a lot of us don't think about when we hear of a robbery in the neighborhood or something like that, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I guess if it's something more personal like that, it kind of strikes close to home. I can't imagine someone coming in pilfering your stuff,
yeah,
that you would use for your work, and it is personal,
and so you have this exhibit at the Komodo Gallery now, until October 8th, and what do you do in your downtime? Say, I mean, and do you have are you able to carve out that time throughout your year?
Yeah, I don't get a lot of downtime. I'm back to painting already.
Yeah.
But I took a little bit of time off just to rest. I overproduced for this exhibition. I gave them 33 paintings, and it's because that's a lot. That's enough for almost two exhibitions. The gallery's having trouble putting up the work because there's just so little space left over.
Yeah.
So I overproduced. So I did take a couple of weeks just to recover. But I was painting just before I came here today, and I just enjoy it. So that's what I do.
And so to recharge oneself, I mean, what do you find useful, not only physically but creatively?
Yeah, well, reading. I really enjoy reading books. Going for long walks down the beach with a dog, and getting out my bike and just enjoying the fresh air and enjoying the city we live in, going for some dinners and restaurants and cafes, coffee, that kind of thing. Just kind of like vacationing at home, almost.
Yeah, are there artists in this town that you admire or that whose work interests you?
Yeah, there's definitely some artists whose work I really enjoy looking at. You know, there's Gordon Smith, of course. You know, his work is fabulous. And there's a couple of photographers I really enjoy, like Brian Howell and he's fantastic. And
how much photography do you do? I mean, I've seen your Instagram page, and you have a pretty good eye at it. I mean, if you say wanted to set aside painting for a bit, I mean, you could do that, couldn't you?
No.
Really?
No, I don't think so.
See, this is my untrained eye says no, otherwise.
Thank you for the compliment about the photography, but it's just a different genre altogether. I mean, I'm known for being a painter. You look at a guy like another artist whose work I really enjoy is Kevin Boyle, and his work is it's beautiful, and it's painterly in its approach. But it's still photography, and for him to go from photography to painting, it's just as problematic as it would be for me to go from painting to photography. But I appreciate the kind words about my photography skills.
Yeah, I can't take a picture either, so that's everything else looks better than whatever I would produce. David, it's a pleasure to meet you, as I said, and I appreciate you coming down to chat, and all good wishes to you and the family as absence continues at the Komodo Gallery, pardon me.
Yeah.
And thanks for this.
Well, thank you for having me.
The Artist Talk is this Saturday, the 17th of September at 1 p.m. Visit komodogallery.com/absence for more, and of course David's own website, davidwilson.ca. David Wilson joined me in person here in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Ponto.